Hi, this is Mark Holden, and you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
I'm Apollo 16 astronaut Charlie Duke, the 10th man to walk on the moon. Please join us from 7 to 8 p.m. on Wednesdays. The Space Show, Australia, on 88.3 Southern FM. And Charlie was in town last Wednesday. And, we shook his hand. And also there was many other people, one of which we're going to hear from in a few moments. But the main purpose of the event was to show a movie which was called Mission Control, The Unsung Heroes. And, well, here's what some of the people thought about the movie.
The original author talked about having a wake-up moment when he went into the original Mission Control, and I had a very similar experience when I first saw the actual Apollo spacecraft. Being not of the age of the people that experienced it firsthand, that was probably one of the most life-changing events I've ever had. Still at Cape Kennedy.
Right. Oh, well, it was good stuff. Most of the stuff I've sort of seen before in various NASA movies and things over the years, but nice to see it all put together in a common picture.
Even though I've had the privilege of seeing the movie twice previously, this was my third viewing of it. It's thoroughly enjoyable. To me, it's the view of Mission Control. You get to see them in the perspective of they are like an additional crew member. They seem to go through all the experiences that the actual flight crew go through, short of actually being in the spacecraft themselves. The drain in time on their families, the drain on their lives, how they reflect upon it many years later. It's a real eye-opener, and it was a really thoroughly enjoyable movie.
I thought the whole event was fantastic. It was really nice to obviously see someone who'd actually walked on the moon, one of the five remaining on the Earth, but also to get a bit more understanding of the Mission Control guys and what they did and what the important role is in the whole program. And I mean, it was highlighted in Apollo 13, but really gave names and faces and true identities to the real people. So I thought it was a great night, and congratulations to the producers.
The opinions of members of the committee of the Space Association of Australia about the movie. Well, I caught up the next day with Rick Houston at the Healesville Sanctuary. Rick is the author of the book Go Flight, The Unsung Heroes of Mission Control, and he's the associate producer of the film Mission Control, The Unsung Heroes of Apollo. Here's how our conversation went. Welcome to the Space Show, Rick.
Thanks for having me.
What brings you here to Australia?
Well, we were actually going to be able to do a tour of the film Mission Control, The Unsung Heroes of Apollo, going to several cities, and I was able to make the trip here to Melbourne for the opener last night.
Okay, and this film, it's based on a book.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's based on my book, Go Flight, The Unsung Heroes of Mission Control. It came out in late 2015, and I cannot begin to tell you how happy I am with the response to the book.
And what's the book called?
It's called Go Flight, The Unsung Heroes of Mission Control.
And who are the unsung heroes?
They're the people who worked in Mission Control during the Apollo era, the shuttle era. I've been able to get to know some of the people who worked in Mission Control, and they really are ground-based astronauts. They care very passionately, very deeply about the space program, and they really do consider themselves the first line of defense in human spaceflight.
Many people would not be familiar with the vision of Mission Control, but perhaps they've seen the movie Apollo 13 and they saw the guy in the white vest. Who was that?
His name is Gene Kranz, and he's probably the most legendary flight director NASA has ever had. But one of the reasons that I wanted to write this book, and this is no disrespect to Gene at all, but I wanted to know that there were other people on that team who helped save Apollo 13 in particular, and who worked so hard to make space flight a success in general. I wanted them to know who people like Glenn Lunny and John Aaron and Cy Liebergott and Jerry Bostick. You know, there were tons of people who worked in that room and made it their career to work in human spaceflight.
And when did the flight director legend start? Was it back in the Mercury days in the 1960s, or was it later in the Gemini program?
Well, Chris Kraft was NASA's first flight director, and he certainly is more than a legend. He created the concept of mission control. And so I kind of call him the godfather of mission control, because nothing really happened without his approval and say-so. So Chris was Dr. Kraft was certainly the first legendary flight director. And then along came John Hodge and Chris Kraft and Glenn Lunny, and Gene Kranz and Glenn Lunny, and they really opened the doors for us to get to the moon.
How essential was their job in deciding what happened during a mission, and even before that, during the mission planning?
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that what happened in human spaceflight would not have been possible without the people in mission control, because somebody had to look after the systems on the spacecraft, in particular the mechanics of the spacecraft. But they also had to have people who looked after the trajectory of the spacecraft. They, you know, the people who worked in the trench in mission control, they were the ones who basically aimed the bullet and made the spacecraft go where they needed it to go. And the systems people looked after, they were kind of the mechanics, they were kind of the plumbers in mission control. They fixed, you know, the guts of the spacecraft.
And how much autonomy did they have from the hierarchy further up in NASA?
Well, certainly the flight director had final say on every issue. His word was law during the Apollo era, and as you know, I like to call them the flight directors. They were in charge, and even the president of the United States could not have overruled the flight director during a mission. It was that serious a position.
And very responsible. Did they feel the weight of that responsibility on their shoulders?
I don't know that you would call it necessarily feeling the weight. Certainly they knew that they were in a serious business. But they had to be unflappable under pressure. And I think that was approved through their intense simulations. Basically, the job of a simulation person was to kill the astronauts, and it was the flight controller's job to figure out a way to save those astronauts, to correct what was going on. And they learned that under very intense pressure during simulations, to the point where during a flight, it became almost routine. It became almost boring, because, you know, more times than not, nothing was happening. You know, nothing serious and life-threatening was happening, was taking place. You know, and certainly there were cases like the launch of Apollo 12, where the vehicle was struck by lightning, and the flight of Apollo 13, which most everybody knows about, where they had to put those training simulations into practice, and they had to put it into practice very quickly.
Does mission control still operate in much the same way today in the, well, during the shuttle era and then in the post-shuttle era?
Oh, absolutely. One of the greatest thrills of my career, I actually got to sit a shift in the International Space Station control room, an overnight shift. And it was amazing to me to see just how professional those people are, those men and women who work there are. I remember one of the cases, one of the issues that was taking place on the shift that I observed, there was supposed to be a Russian press conference with the cosmonaut on board. And right up until, you know, just moments before that broadcast was supposed to start, the TV link was not working. And so it was really fascinating to see the interchanges between the guy sitting next to me, who is actually in charge of the TV downlink, and his Russian counterparts. And it was just so absolutely professional how they worked those issues. They never became unglued. They never seemed like, you know, the world was caving in. They didn't panic. They just worked through the issues and went on about the business of putting on a press conference.
I've heard a test pilot say that in a crash situation, he doesn't say, "Oh, I've got 1 minute before I die." Instead, he says, "I've got 1 minute to save this thing."
Well, that's exactly how a flight controller and a flight director in mission control think. You know, one of the great lines that Jerry Griffin, one of the longtime flight directors in the Moker, he said on Apollo 13, he never once considered the possibility that they would want to lose the crew. He said, we kept working out on the issues, we kept working on the consumables, we kept working on the trajectory, and we never run out of options. We never ran out of possibilities on things that we could do. Now, he said, obviously, it was touch and go there for, you know, a couple of days after the accident, but he said we never ran out of options and never panicked. And, you know, I wish that I had that kind of mentality.
Most people will have seen the movie Apollo 13. How true was that to the spirit of what happened? I mean, obviously they made cinematic license in some areas, but basically, how true to the spirit of what happened was that movie?
I'll say this. I think the movie Apollo 13 was very, very important in bringing NASA's space program, human spaceflight program, back into the American consciousness. That said, there are plenty of inaccuracies in the movie. And what's the best way to put this? What's the most appropriate way to put this? Gene Kranz did not work every single shift. During the flight, because he's basically the only flight director who's portrayed as being on console. And, you know, obviously he had to go to the bathroom at some point. but there were plenty of men who worked in that room during Apollo 13 who helped save that flight. And as a matter of fact, one of the flight controllers who did work in that room actually challenged me. When I was working on the book, he said, "I want you to pull back the veil on Apollo 13 and get past the mythology, you know, of the movie." And I really had fun doing that. I had fun, you know, talking to the people who did that. And, you know, one of the most telling stories that I heard was from Ed Findell. You know, he said, we came into work. He'd been playing a softball game with Jerry Griffin, and they were actually in their apartment, in one of their apartments, drinking a cold beer together when they got the call. And so he said, I was hot and sweaty. Jerry was hot and sweaty. And we came in to work in our sweat clothes and didn't take a shower for the next 4 days. Bob Carlton said that he slept under a console during the flight. And there are just tons of stories like that. You know, just the absolute dedication to bringing those three astronauts back is just absolutely heartwarming. because it kind of gives you, it kind of restores your faith in humanity.
Well, thanks, Rick, for joining us on the Space Show.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to coming back again.
And I was talking there with Rick Houston, the author of the book Go Flight, The Unsung Heroes of Mission Control, and the associate producer of the film Mission Control, The Unsung Heroes of Apollo, which was shown at the Astor Cinema last Wednesday. And we have more from him. I did quite a long conversation with him, and we have more from that conversation on next week's The Space Show. Well, thank you to Peter Arwood for coming into the studio and giving us opinions on the budget. I'm Andrew Rennie. We'll see you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock.